Hello, and welcome to the Let's Talk Fucking Cancer podcast. We are your support, so let's talk fucking cancer. Hi everyone, Colette here. Thank you for tuning in today to the Let's Talk Fucking Cancer podcast. I would personally like to say thank you and hello to all of our new listeners. It has been so exciting to watch our reach grow. Please remember you can reach out to us at any time with your story or your professional experience in the oncology field or with cancer patients. Or if there's anything you would like to see us cover or research, just let us know. Email us at podcast@weareyoursupport.com. We apologize for the delay in our new episodes, but we will be back with you next week with all new episodes of the Let's Talk Fucking Cancer podcast. For today, please enjoy our recast of Dr. Bridgman discussing chemo brain. See you next week.
Hello, and welcome back to the Let's Talk Fucking Cancer podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Leah, and I'm here with my fabulous co-host, Colette.
Hi, everyone.
And this evening, we are delighted to welcome Dr. Matt Bridgman to the podcast. He is going to be sharing his expertise with us. I know that we talked about him a little bit in our tips and tricks episode, and now you guys are going to get the full experience. Dr. Bridgman has a PhD in clinical psychology, and he is the creator of Clear Mind Blueprint and the founder of Clear Mind Coaching. Welcome, Dr. Bridgman.
Dr. Bridgman.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
My pleasure.
Especially since we're West Coast and you're East Coast time. So we very much appreciate you giving your time this evening.
Yeah. With the time change too, it feels like it's 9 o'clock right now.
So it does.
My apologies.
Oh, no, that's okay.
We're right there with you.
Yeah.
Apparently California voted to do away with the time change, but
really,
we were
still doing it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Our voices were not heard.
No.
So Dr. Bridgman, if you would share a little bit about your backstory and education and what led you to neuropsychology.
Yeah. So if, we could probably spend all evening talking about this, but I'll try and give you maybe the quick version. I majored in psychology in college, just was interested in the human mind, enjoyed that. At the same time, I thought about maybe going to med school. I enjoyed biology, but enjoyed psychology, so stuck with that. But then decided by the end of college, well, if I'm going to make a living with psychology, I probably should get a little bit more education. So then I decided to go to grad school. So I ended up going to graduate school at Fuller. Fuller is actually a seminary in California, Pasadena, right in LA there. And so I got my PhD in clinical psychology there. And when I started there, my thought was that I would probably end up being like a marriage therapist and do a lot of marital counseling. But within the first year, trying to figure out what I was going to do for my dissertation and just getting, you know, my feet under me with the whole grad school experience, I wasn't really finding myself passionate about anything in particular. So I wasn't really sure what to do. And then I took my very first class in neuropsychology, and I was like, oh, this is really fascinating, because it ended up, I found where I could kind of have both my love of psychology and understanding the human mind, but also kind of the biology behind it. And so really understanding the brain, which is the neuro part, and then the psychology, the human behavior, our mind, our emotions, our thinking. And so that was kind of actually my first experience of neuropsychology was in grad school. And so once I took that class, I was like, oh, this is fascinating. This is what I want to study. And so I changed my focus. Thankfully, my grad school allowed me to change my focus, change my advisor, and kind of move to a different track within the same program. It was all still clinical psychology, but got to focus on neuropsychology and get some more specific classes and clinical trainings and focus the research in that area during grad school.
Oh, that's fantastic.
That's awesome. And I was going to say, we're missing our one third tonight. Julia, our producer, mm-hmm. could not be here. And she was, and she still is, but in neuropsychology in school. And so she was so excited to meet you and talk with you, and was so disappointed when she couldn't join us tonight. So
yeah, we'll have to follow up with some other time. Yeah,
absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I promised her we'd ask her all the questions, but definitely she would love to meet you.
And I can empathize with not wanting to do the marriage and family therapy part of it. I got my bachelor's in psychology and didn't know what to do with it after that. And so I'm on a totally different path now, but falling in love with biology and science late and seeing how the two interconnect is very cool. And I'm so glad that you were able to discover that passion and make that a career and be accessible for your patients.
Mm-hmm. Put a little more context around that, like the my experience that led me to decide to start Clear Mind Coaching. So after I graduated with my PhD, then I did a 2-year fellowship after that, which allowed me to get the specialized training to then be able to call myself a neuropsychologist, and really understanding the brain, the relationship between our brain and behavior. And so then after that, then I got my first job as a staff neuropsychologist at a small community hospital. And that was just over 13 years ago that I got that first job out of fellowship. And so I'm at the same hospital today. That small community hospital has grown to a big hospital system, but I'm still at the same place there working as a staff neuropsychologist. And most of my day there at my job is I get referrals from primary care docs, family docs, and neurologists and other specialists when their patients, their clients are complaining about memory trouble or other cognitive trouble. Then they refer them to me. And my job then as a neuropsychologist is to help figure out what's going on, what's causing their memory trouble, what's causing their concentration or word finding trouble, and what to do about it. And so I'm seeing folks, I'm doing in-depth interviews to understand their medical history, their work history, social history, and then putting them through some formal testing, formally testing their memory, attention, intelligence, thinking speed, to then help figure out what's going on with their memory here. Is this like early stages of dementia, or is it related to their head injury history, or related to multiple sclerosis, or some other medical issue that they're going through? And so, but then what usually happens is then I see them for a follow-up appointment, say, here's how you did on all the tests. Here's what I think is what's going on, causing your trouble. And then here's what I recommend you do about it. And so then I give them a bunch of recommendations for how to help with the trouble that they're having. And then that's kind of it. Then I send them back to their family doc or their neurologist. And then I end up usually not seeing them again. And they just follow through with all the recommendations that I gave them. You know, over the past decade of doing this, I partly it's because I'm the only neuropsychologist in my hospital system. Partly it's because as a neuropsychologist, there aren't a lot of people in our specialty. So you have to, you know, if you don't come and see me, you've got to drive 2 hours to Pittsburgh or 2 hours to, you know, a big city to find another one of me. There aren't a lot of us around. So I get a lot of referrals. And so then I just get really backed up, really busy doing these evaluations, telling people what they should do, and then send them on their way. So I don't really get to treat them. I don't really get to follow with them. And so doing that day in and day out for 10 years, I'm like, I've got a lot of guidance and information and explaining and things that I can do to help people in a much bigger way than I'm currently helping them. So I was becoming kind of dissatisfied with things and saying, there's got to be a better way that I can help people in a bigger way than this. And so just kind of exploring ideas, looking at other more innovative ways of practicing neuropsychology and doing other things. I came across some folks who are doing health coaching and doing online group coaching. And I was like, is there a way I can change my model of providing care? And so then that's eventually what led me to think about, doing some coaching, work, kind of getting, still doing my hospital, job in traditional healthcare, but kind of stepping outside of that a little bit to have a more coaching approach, to things. And so then that's what kind of led, ultimately then to starting Clear Mind Coaching.
I think that's fantastic.
People to your mind.
Yeah. Mm. So it's interesting you mentioned coaching. I had just learned about a cancer coach. So it's a nurse coach mm-hmm. that does it for oncology patients and stuff. So she actually deals with the whole journey and through survivorship. And it's really cool. I had no idea that there was these specific types of coaching. And then I ran across mm-hmm. yours too. And I was like, wow, like we're really starting to get into the weeds here. We're starting to really, you know, not just keep it in such a general form, but like really dig into what we need to focus on once there's, say, a big diagnosis or something like that. You know, we're actually giving some tools. So I think that's really great. I love this so much.
When keeping things in a traditional healthcare model, where the insurance companies are the payers, then you have to kind of do things according to what the insurance companies say you have to do as far as paperwork and billing and how much time you spend. And so that's very restrictive.
Yeah.
And so part of the problem. And so trying to step outside of that in order to have some more flexibility to care for people in a way that's a lot more effective and transformational.
Yeah, I agree completely. That's part of why we founded our nonprofit Ways, who we support the cancer community with the things that they just aren't getting either in the medical system, or they're just not available, or insurances are standing in the way. And so that's why the podcast came about, because of our nonprofit. We've been doing our nonprofit for about 5 years. And it's just like, I love that we're starting to see those holes and fill them in, even within our own, you know, private means, where I wish I had the backing of our big hospitals, but since we don't, we're just forging along. So this is great that you have done this.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. So when you were talking about some of the coaching, so what is some of the coaching that ClearMind offers?
So the business, CMC ClearMind Coaching. So kind of three, I guess, main goals or main tasks that I want to do through the business. And the first is promoting awareness and it's really focused around cancer. So cognitive trouble with our mind. And when I say trouble with our mind, that's partially, and maybe, you know, a lot related to memory and cognitive skills, but also mood and emotion related functions of the mind, you know, things like depression and anxiety. The brain is designed to generate moods and emotions. So all of those things, how can we, you know, what kind of troubles can we have with our mind specifically related to cancer and cancer treatments? And so with that saying, well, what can I do through the business to help just promote awareness to the public at large, to people experiencing it? You know, a lot of people, I get comments through social media of people who are going through it and didn't realize that there was a name, like people who have still never heard the name chemo brain.
Right.
There are, you know, might get into it later, problems with the term chemo brain, but the term chemo brain has done a lot of good to promote awareness, but yet still so many people are not even aware of that term.
Right.
So just helping people experiencing it to have more awareness of it, but then also a lot of people in healthcare, a lot of healthcare providers still don't understand the troubles that our mind can have after cancer and cancer treatment. So promoting awareness is number one. Number two is pointing people in the direction of things they can do to help, right? What services, what supports, what things can people do to help with what they're going through. So that's the second thing, just spreading awareness of that. What can we do about it? And then the third piece is the coaching. And so I do have a formal coaching program under the umbrella of ClearMind Coaching. The formal coaching program is called ClearMind Restoration. So that's the program in my business. And so that's for folks who are, who've had cancer, who have undergone treatment and are having these cognitive problems, especially memory trouble, concentration trouble, word finding trouble. And it's not just a minor problem for them, but it's a really big problem and it's causing a lot of trouble at work for them. And it's something that they really need to take action now to get it fixed. If the other, you know, things that I share through websites and social media about, hey, go here for some strategies. Here are some strategies you can use to strengthen your mind if those are just not cutting it and they want a more intensive program of coaching directly with me, then I've got a program for that.
Love that. I love that so much. So since we're speaking about it being cancer-based, and that's obviously why we wanted to definitely talk to you about chemo brain today or cons. So if you could explain a little bit to us what chemo brain is and the transitioning into using the term cons.
Definitely. So chemo brain is a term. It's not a medical diagnosis. It's not a formal medical label, if you will, but it's a term that was generated actually by cancer patients. And I believe it was back in the 1990s. So this has been around a long time, to refer to the cognitive troubles, memory trouble, brain fog, concentration trouble, that these folks were experiencing, during their cancer, journey, their cancer experience. And so it was really important because, you know, in the 80s and in the 90s, people were having these symptoms, but it was really overlooked and it was being dismissed. And even up
was it just chalked up as like a side effect of chemo, or like this is just something you're going to experience, or not even acknowledging it?
It was, explained away as depression or fatigue or sleep problems or stress.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And so and even now, there are people even now, unfortunately, who still say chemo brain doesn't exist. It's not real. Chemotherapy doesn't go into the brain. It doesn't affect your brain. It doesn't cause those problems, which is completely untrue. Well, parts of that are untrue, right? There are some chemotherapies where the drug itself does not go into the brain.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that it doesn't affect the brain indirectly through other chemistry fluctuations, but
our body is a system that all works together.
Yeah. Yep. So it started in the 90s for folks to say, hey, I'm having these symptoms, and it didn't start until I started having chemo. So that's kind of when it started, and then research did begin. So there were folks at big institutions beginning to research chemo brain symptoms in the 90s, writing some articles on it. And then finally in the 2000s, in the past 10 years, especially, more and more research is being done, on chemo brain, which is really great. Through the course of that, coming to realize, well, it's not just the chemotherapy. And so on the one hand, the term chemo brain is really important because it kind of, started to bring awareness to these problems. But now that we've learned more about it, we realize, oh, these symptoms, memory trouble, brain fog, all this stuff, is not just simply from chemo. It can happen from a lot of other things too. It can happen from radiation. It can happen from hormone therapies. It even can happen just from the cancer itself. And so there's, plenty of research now showing that, well, you folks can be demonstrating memory problems even on formal memory tests. A lot of the research is done in women with breast cancer. And so a lot of women, even after they've been diagnosed with breast cancer, but before starting any treatment, can show some changes in their memory. So that's got to be just from the cancer itself, not even just the treatment. And you add some treatment on top of that, and then that can just continue to magnify,
right?
The trouble. So coming to realize, yeah, there's a lot more going on that can cause the trouble, not just chemo.
I think that was one of my biggest shocks when I was researching chemo brain, because I have chemo, so I assumed that it was just the chemo itself, but realizing there was so much more at play. Mm-hmm. And that's when I had come across your post about cons, and I was like, wow, okay, this explains it so much more in detail about all the things that could affect you and cause chemo brain cons, cancer fog, whatever you want to call it. But I thought that was really interesting because I just assumed it was the chemo.
So just to explain the term cons is something I made up. as a way of having some label that better captures this phenomenon of or this experience of symptoms with our mind that are related to cancer and cancer treatments and all of that. So I'm not the first person to try and come up with a term. So I don't know when the first time was, but there was an article at least 10 years ago, I think, of some people saying, hey, the chemo brain term is imperfect and we need to come up with a new term because it's not just the chemotherapy. So other people thought of that and have come up with terms way before I did. Cancer-related cognitive impairment is one term.
Okay.
That some other folks with a while ago. Cancer-related cognitive decline. Cancer-related cognitive impairment. So CRCI is something that you can find in research that some researchers came up with. And that's a good term too. But that also then is referring just to, it's saying cancer related.
Right.
Right. And then the second part of that is cognitive impairment. And so it's really just capturing the cognitive troubles, the memory trouble, the concentration trouble, the fogginess. And so that's not capturing any of the emotion changes that can happen. Irritability, just being more easily emotional in general, loss of patience, anxiety, worry, all the emotion changes that can happen. And so I was just thinking, you know, it would be nice to have a term that kind of encompasses all of it, you know, a little bit more of an umbrella term that captures both the complexity of all of the different factors that can lead to the problems, and then also the variety of all of the different mind-related problems that can show up. And so then I came up with a cancer ordeal, neuropsychological symptoms, CONS, cancer ordeal, neuropsychological symptoms. So neuropsychological is saying it's neuro, it's brain, it's psychological, it's with our psyche, it's with our mind. And when you're talking about our mind, we're talking about memory and attention and thinking speed and word finding ability and decision making and organizing, all these thinking skills. But we're also talking about moods and emotions, depression, anxiety, irritability, frustration, loss of patience, trouble experiencing joy, all those emotions. So neuropsychological kind of captures all of those brain mind related symptoms. And then the first part was CO, cancer ordeal. And so an ordeal is what? An ordeal is some long, difficult, painful struggle, something that's not brief. You know, it's long, it's over time, and it's really difficult. And so, you know, I thought about saying, well, cancer experience, neuropsychological symptoms, or cancer journey, but journey experience, they didn't quite capture what I was thinking.
I feel ordeal
seems like it's a better term.
Yeah, cons. When I read it, I was reading it going, this makes it, it felt so encompassing of just everything that I was like, this is great. Like it just, it felt right when I was reading it.
And I love hearing the thought. And I love hearing the thoughtfulness that and the intention behind choosing the name. And you're right, ordeal is apt.
Yes.
Right. Because there are so many things within the cancer ordeal, right? It is an ordeal. That can then affect our mind, right?
Yeah.
It could be the cancer itself. It could be the chemo. It could be the radiation. It could be the formal treatments.
Right.
But then there's a whole lot of other stuff going on. I mean, you can have side effects from the treatments like anemia, or you can have vitamin deficiencies or GI nutritional deficiencies that can happen. Right. But then also just the disruption in life. Right. Not being able to work, having to go to doctor appointments all the time, the financial stresses, relationship stresses. There are just a lot of other changes that are part of the cancer experience that can also affect how well our mind is performing on a given day.
Absolutely.
So it's all.
Yeah. I was definitely thinking about that with just the medications they give you. So you're going to start chemo. So make sure and take these medications this many days prior and this many days after, and then you go off of them. And then the next week you're going back on them. And that cycle, how it can just mess with you internally. And I'm sure that can cause a bunch of upset all over the place. And then you have just the mental and emotional part of it, where I lived at the hospital for, I was there about 5 days a week. I was used to it. They were my friends, you know, and it was like getting this new, I had just had a new baby too. So it was like going away from being this new mom to being this new cancer patient and learning this whole new routine. Like, it's upsetting emotionally, physically. And so it really felt like your term really encompassed the whole, all of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and just the reading, because I'm not like a researcher at a big institution running research studies, but just reading the literature and reading the research that other people are doing, and making connections between different things. Just I think having a better appreciation for all of the different things that happen, all of the different changes that we experience, all the different disruptions to life. And how each of those things you know, it's the combination of all those things. They add up and they magnify each other to then affect, you know, how our mind is running. You know, recognizing that not everyone experiences this, right? So being a little bit sensitive and you know, hopefully that people who are just recently diagnosed are not saying, oh, this is like going to be horrible. I've got like this sentence of my mind is going to be terrible here. Like, not everybody experiences these things, right? So there are a lot of people who go through cancer and cancer treatments who don't have cons, don't experience all these con symptoms, but realizing that there are a lot of things through that whole experience that can affect our mind, our mood, our memory. And so then that means, well, what are we going to do about it? Like, if it's not just as simple as saying, oh, it was the chemotherapy, and it's a lot more complicated than that, which means if we're going to do something to improve it and help it, there's not one magic pill, one magic wand that's going to correct it all. And so then that leads to, okay, so then what are we going to do about it?
Yeah. Yeah. So what do you do about it?
do you have some, tips or, any words of wisdom for those struggling with, you know, chemo brain or cons out there that just could help? I don't know. I was thinking like word games, or I try and do like words with friends, or just anything that makes me think a little more critically, all the way up to, I've read that medication could help. But if that was 100% factual, I'm sure we'd all be medicated, and we're not. So do you have any tips and tricks for our listeners out there that may be experiencing chemo brain?
Yeah. So a couple of thoughts and responses. And the first is just for people who are just starting to experience this, to know that what's going on with your mind is real. Like, you're not making it up. Like, people, you know, claim that they have a symptom and they get the message, oh, it's all in your head.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a funny statement, right?
Because it is.
You're right. Yes, exactly. My point exactly.
but it is real. And so if you are going to a doctor and or some healthcare provider and you say, hey, my mind is not as sharp as it should be, I'm foggy, my mood is off, whatnot, and they brush you off, or you say, hey, I've got chemo brain, or and they say, oh, that's not real. Now, if you go to them and say, hey, I'm having cons, they're going to have no idea what you're talking about.
Right.
I just came up with that recently. So nobody except the three of us and you watch this, know about it.
We're spreading the word. Now our listeners.
We're spreading the word. Yep. But if they say it's not real, then either you need to educate them, and, you know, browse my Facebook page and look for some of the posts, that I've posted links to Cleveland Clinic and some other places that have chemo brain pages, so you can educate your provider that, nope, this is real. It's a real thing. And we need to do something about it. That's one thing. Or if they just still don't believe you, then you need to get a new provider.
There you go.
A provider that's, it's going to listen.
We're big about advocating for yourself.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And then the next is kind of thinking through two things. And I guess if I really like to use analogies. So if I can use an analogy, some imagery here. If your brain is like a ship sailing on the ocean, and if your boat is good and healthy and secure and seaworthy, and no water is pouring in anywhere, and your sails are good, your engines are good, then you can sail smoothly. If your brain is good and healthy, you can think clearly, you can reason, you can problem solve, you can learn and remember things quickly and easily. Cancer, chemo, all of the whole cancer ordeal, they do things that get in the way, so then the ship is not able to sail quite as smoothly, quite as well. And whether that's cancer treatments are like termites that get in and chew holes, so now you've got water coming in to the boat, or the sails get ripped, or different things about the ship are just not working appropriately. So then what do we do about it? Well, I mean, the first thing is we need to say, if there are termites that are actively causing problems on the ship, well, we need to get rid of the termites, right? If we're actively going through treatment, you know, that's, and maybe this is not a perfect analogy because I don't want people to think they've got, medication eating holes in their brain. That's not true. Because again, most of the time you get a brain scan, your brain scan's fine, right? Yes. So you're not going to see damage showing up on your brain scan. So don't be having nightmares about brain damage. But if we have something that's actively kind of getting in the way, like some, we're not necessarily going to stop treatment. I mean, you need to work together with your oncology team because you might still very much need the treatment because you don't want the cancer to take over, right? But then also realize, well, if I have ongoing treatment, I'm going to have to do some other things to keep my brain as healthy as I can until my treatment is over. And then hopefully I can do things to get improvement. So I'm going to just try and stay stable. But if treatment's all over, right, if I've gone through treatment, treatment's over, but then I need to check and make sure, well, do I have some ongoing medical issues that are not treated as well as possible? Do I have some anemia or some vitamin deficiency or some thyroid trouble going on where it's an active chemistry imbalance in my body that could be corrected or improved? Have I developed sleep apnea or diabetes, blood sugar fluctuation issues? Is there some other kind of, or do I have some infection kind of issues or food allergies or acid reflux or, just looking for other medical conditions that need to be stabilized or treated. That's really important. And so assuming all that's done, then the next things we need to do are optimizing our brain and body's chemistry even further by making sure, and this is going to be a lot of common sense stuff, but it's really, really necessary for brain health. We need good hydration. You need really good nutrition. So going back to one of your early podcasts that you had with, you had a nutritionist, right? An oncology nutritionist.
Yeah.
Need someone like that on your team to help you make sure you're optimizing your food, because what you take into your body is going to affect your brain.
Right.
Help it to heal and recover if you're eating a good healthy diet, or it's going to get in the way, to high sugar foods and high processed foods or any foods that you're allergic to or sensitive to, those are going to make it very difficult for you to recover how your mind is working for you. Physical exercise. Physical exercise is necessary.
Right.
It's huge. When we exercise physically, it changes chemistry in our brain and our body in a way that's really necessary to help to re-strengthen it and to grow it. But we also have to kind of balance that, right? Because it is certainly possible to overdo it.
Yeah. Right? Okay.
And if you've got pain issues, if you've got fatigue issues, if you are struggling with some inflammation issues in your body, some joint inflammation or other things, there might very well be exercises that you should not do.
Right.
You don't want to be making pain issues worse. You don't want to make fatigue issues worse. So you have to find the right kind of movement for you and for your body that's going to help promote good circulation and blood flow, but without making pain or fatigue issues worse. And so that's really important. There's some benefits to some to some weightlifting kind of exercises. But again, keeping in mind what's my body capable of doing safely. Right.
If you've been sitting on the couch the last 5 years, don't go try to run marathon.
Exactly. Right. You got to start where you're at and go slow, right? Slow and steady wins the race.
Yeah.
Exercise is so important because have you heard of brain drive neurotrophic factor?
No, but I feel like I need to know what this is.
Tell me what that is. Yes. So brain derived neurotrophic factor. So it's a chemical in the brain and that's like Miracle Grow, right? So it's like Miracle Grow for your brain cells. So this is really important. So neurogenesis is real. Have you heard the term neurogenesis? So neurogenesis is the growth of new brain cells.
Okay.
Growth of new brain cells. So even during adulthood, we do grow new brain cells. Not as fast as we did when we were kids, right? Not nearly that fast, but it has been proven that even during adulthood, we grow new brain cells. And then we can also grow new connections between existing brain cells. And so the power of our brain, the power of our mind is not just simply how many brain cells we have, but how many connections are there between them. And so you take brain cells that have connections with each other and we can form new connections, but we can also take existing connections and we can strengthen them, make them stronger, make the things work more efficiently. All of that to come back and say this brain-derived neurotrophic factor, this Miracle-Grow, that boosts the growth of brand new brain cells, but then it also helps promote new connections between existing brain cells and strengthening those connections. So this Miracle-Grow is really important, right? And when we exercise, physical exercise is one of the best things that we can do to boost the amount of Miracle-Grow.
Okay. Gotcha.
Right. So when you do your daily workout, just think, hey, I'm dumping Miracle-Grow on my brain, right? Help strengthen my brain.
I was going to say the more I've learned throughout this podcast, the less I can argue with working out.
it's hard. It's,
I'm like, I exercise in the pee here.
And then a third piece of the puzzle is stress management. Stress management is really, really important. Okay. Stress is part of life, you know, and some level of stress is necessary for our health. Physical exercise is a form of stress. You know, we're purposefully putting physical stress on our body for the benefits of it. But again, there's a level at which you can overdo it, right? So some stress is good, whether physical or emotional stress, intellectual stress, you know, trying to learn something new, take a test, emotional stress, dealing with conflict in a relationship. You know, those are all can be important and grow us and strengthen us as long as we're not getting too much, right? As long as we have enough time to rest and recover in between moments of stress, right? And that's the key, is saying, well, going through back to our term cancer ordeal, right? There are a lot of sources of stress within the whole cancer ordeal. And so if we think about stress in terms of what's going on in our body, and know, well, our body has a stress response system, and the body's stress response system is the sympathetic nervous system and the parasympathetic nervous system. Are you familiar with those?
Yes. Terms, yeah. Right? Fight and flight, right?
Yeah. So sympathetic is fight or flight. And then parasympathetic is rest and digest.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. And so they're like complementary muscles, like bicep and tricep, right? They kind of, kind of work opposite each other. So you need them both, right? And so if our stress response system is good and healthy, then when we encounter a stressful event, our sympathetic nervous system takes over, adrenaline goes up, cortisol goes up, muscle tension goes up, fluctuations in blood pressure, blood flow, things like that. But then once the stress is over, we go home, we take a nap, we go have a meal, we go try and go to sleep, then our sympathetic should calm down and our parasympathetic should take over and activate rest and digest. So cortisol levels drop and adrenaline levels drop, acetylcholine levels go up, digestion turns back on. So all this chemistry going on, but all that has to be really well balanced, right? We need both. We need time in both modes, if you will, in order for our body to stay good and healthy. We need time in fight or flight. You know, we need some stress to strengthen us and improve our health, but we need enough time to rest and recover from that in order to stay in balance and stay healthy. Well, it's completely understandable going through the cancer ordeal that we end up spending a lot of time in fight or flight mode,
right?
And that sympathetic activation, a lot of parts of the cancer experience are stressful situations. And so even though we might, you know, even if we're not like panicking, we might not have anxiety, you know, but even so, our body is still going to be in this activation mode.
Right. Yeah.
A lot because it's going on. Well, if our body is in that too much for too long, it's like redlining the engine. It's like running your engine at high all the time. It's just going to wear out faster. You know, the body's going to wear out faster. And that's going to affect our memory, the memory part of our brain. You know, too much cortisol, too much adrenaline for long periods of time wears out the hippocampus, the memory part of the brain. And so we need to make sure we're keeping our body balanced, you know, have some good rest and digest times to keep our body healthy, to keep our brain and our memory healthy. So that's an important piece of the puzzle.
Definitely.
Does that make sense?
Yeah,
absolutely.
When you look at the numbers, the percentages out there for how many people are getting diagnosed with chemo brain, do you agree with them? I've just seen, as I've been researching it, I've been seeing a lot of like 20 to 30% or this or that. And I just wonder sometimes, is it much more than that? And they're just not getting diagnosed.
So the one article that I've seen referenced a bunch says like 75% of people, when you look at during and right after cancer treatment,
wow,
like 75% of people are experiencing cognitive symptoms.
Okay. Oh, wow. That I had not read that. I'm so glad to hear that.
Well, and so that goes to show the differences of reported instances versus what's actually happening in patients' lives and whether or not it's being taken seriously. Right. Wow. That's quite a difference in numbers.
Yeah.
So it all depends. I mean, you have to look closely at, how exactly are they measuring it?
Right.
You know, the patient or it's the population that they're polling, they're asking about. So they said 75 who are like during and like right after treatment, but then like 35% of people might continue to experience symptoms like weeks to months to years later.
She points to me because so, that was going to be another one of my questions is, I was seeing a lot of, you know, 6 months to a year after and not so many long-term, where I definitely have seen a huge progression and a better, you know, my cognitive abilities getting better, but I definitely still suffer with it. And I'm 6 years out. So, you know, is it that we, are just talking about it less as we go further out and I don't talk to my doctor so much about it anymore because they blew me off in the first time place. So, you know, I mean, do you think the number is higher that deals with it a lot longer, maybe 6 years like me?
Yeah, probably. It's a very difficult thing to measure.
Right. Yeah.
Because the further out you go, I mean, even 6 months out, there are so many variables that are going to affect whether a person will still experience symptoms 6 months out or not.
Right.
What kind of cancer did they have? What stage was their cancer at? What kind of treatment did they have? How long was their treatment? What was the dose of their treatment? What other medical conditions did they have coming in to having the cancer in the first place? How old are they? What was their, there's a whole lot of research on cognitive reserve or brain reserve, which has to do with like, well, how healthy, how strong was your brain before you had trouble to begin with?
Gotcha.
So you have someone, had a really strong memory and attention before they had cancer, compared to someone who had ADHD before they had cancer.
Okay.
Right. And you know, that is another factor. And then, well, what are the side effects of the cancer treatment? You know, did someone end up with anemia or diabetes and somebody else didn't? Well, that could play a role in how long your symptoms persist. Did you have to have surgery or not? If you did have surgery, were there complications or not? If you did have surgery, what kind of anesthesia did you have? How long did you have anesthesia for? There's a whole lot of factors.
A whole lot of factors
that can influence whether you have persistent symptoms or not.
Okay.
And then when you start looking at not 6 months out, but you start looking at a year out or two years out, well, what all happened during that 2 year period to this this particular person?
True.
Right. I see a lot of folks for concussion in my hospital job, and you can there are a lot of overlaps, a lot of similarities between chemo brain cons and what folks with concussion go through. Okay. A lot of difference, obviously, too. But you know, I'll see two 15-year-olds. Okay, both in high school, and both have a concussion, and it seems like it's a similar severity of concussion. And yet one of them is at a school district where the teachers are very understanding and very supportive and very helpful. And they've got classmates that are very understanding and supportive and helpful. And the other student is at a school district who the teachers don't care. They think they're faking. They've got classmates who pick on them. The environment around them is going to influence how quickly they recover.
Wow. That makes sense.
Jinx.
Yeah. That, as you said it, I was like, wow, that makes sense. And I don't think we give ourselves the grace to think about those types of surrounding situations that may affect what we're going through.
Yeah. Yep.
So do you foresee cons being introduced into the DSM in the future?
Or something by its name.
So you actually gave me a heads up on this question, and I appreciate that. I thought about this a lot today. For better or for worse, I probably not. I mean, it could, but I wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't. And here's why. Because cons is really a label that's kind of an umbrella term. Right. That's trying to have some way of talking about the big picture of all of the different kinds of mind related symptoms and all of the different factors related to the cancer ordeal. So it's kind of an umbrella term. And there's so it's not really specific enough for, I think, the labels and what the DSM tries to do. And the other reason is because there's a lot in the DSM already that can be used to diagnose or label or identify the specific things people might be struggling with that would fall under cons. So to give you an example, like if someone is struggling with memory trouble and they get some testing and find, yep, their memory has changed from what we think it would have been before, and we think it is related to the cancer treatment, or the cancer itself. So what you would do from the DSM, there's a section on neurocognitive disorders.
Okay.
So there's mild neurocognitive disorders and major neurocognitive disorders.
Okay.
So chances are it would be, for most folks, it would be mild neurocognitive disorder. And then you kind of specify it and say mild neurocognitive disorder due to, and then there's a code for mild neurocognitive disorder due to general medical condition.
Okay.
And you would specify what medical condition, right? And so you mild neurocognitive disorder due to ovarian cancer.
Gotcha.
Or they've got like medication induced delirium.
Oh.
So if you're having confusion specifically related to medication, they might use the code for medication induced delirium.
Okay.
If instead we're talking about like anxiety, if we think, well, the anxiety is coming from the cancer itself, like the actual physiology of the disease of the cancer is affecting, you know, triggering anxiety,
right,
or depression, then they've got anxiety disorder due to a general medical condition.
Okay. Right? Okay.
That the diagnosed.
So the wheel doesn't need to be recreated. It's out there.
We just have to pick it apart.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
So there's an ICD-10 for that.
There is. Yeah. Yep.
Oh, sorry. I had to get nerdy for a second.
So I wanted to ask you a few questions from our listeners, but before we do, I wanted to ask you, I had a couple myself.
Sure.
One of the things is I think this was actually in one of our questions from Lisa Cabote-Burke. She had touched on, I had read this as well, that ADHD meds have been used in chemo brain patients. Is that something that you've seen much of, or is kind of standard to you, or not?
So I've seen it a little bit. And okay. So just so you know, as a psychologist, like, I'm not licensed to prescribe medications. Right. I don't, you know, my hospital job, I don't prescribe. And so I don't have nearly the medication expertise as a psychiatrist or neurologist or family doctor, but I have seen it, and I have read some research on, using stimulants and other medications that can be helpful.
Okay.
For some cognitive symptoms. So it's a possibility.
I was very curious in that, because I was diagnosed with ADHD well after my chemo experience. And so they put me on a medication that I was telling them, once I read the information, I was like, that's crazy, because I'm on Vyvanse for ADHD, and I have felt a million times better. And I was like, I wonder if it was ADHD or the chemo brain or both, and the medication just helped it out. But I definitely saw a huge difference. And so when I read that, I was very intrigued. I was like, is that just a coincidence for me, or is that something that is really happening out there? So it's nice to know that there might be, you know, maybe something that could help.
Yeah. We have to hold everything a little bit lightly, right? Because everybody's body is a little bit different. Everybody's situation is a little bit different. And so while, there absolutely are people who will benefit from a stimulant, there are people who it won't help them at all.
Right.
Or their body might not like it, and they might have an unpleasant experience with it. Yeah.
Exactly. And then one other question that I had, and I had been reading up on this, and I had given the ladies a little rundown of how it affected me, was alcohol with chemo brain. Do you see that alcohol affects it greatly, or not so much? Have you noticed anything from your end?
I haven't, but I haven't maybe had the opportunity to explore or evaluate that possibility. So I don't have any direct experience of it. Just based on what I know about how alcohol affects the brain, and what I know about people going through cons type troubles, that, it definitely could cause some trouble for them. It could, their mind might be more sensitive to the effects of alcohol.
Right. And that's what I'm
experiencing cognitive trouble. Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of had shared that with the ladies in our last episode, that I had noticed that one time right after I had been through chemotherapy and all my treatments and stuff. And we had gone out for a girls' night, and I told them it took me a couple days to recover mentally from it. I just could not get my stuff together, and I was very off. And from then on, I was like, okay, I got to watch this, because it really affected me quite a bit. And then when I had read it in some research, I was like, is it really a thing, or is it just me?
Yeah. So I'm a fan of the Mediterranean diet, and the Mediterranean style diet does say, a glass of wine with dinner. I'm generally agreeable to, a glass of wine with dinner is probably good for the brain.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So generally speaking, right?
Yeah.
That's my general thought. But when it comes to the brain struggling to recover from cancer treatments, and that probably best to avoid alcohol.
Right.
And feeling like our brain is fully recovered. Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
So Amelia wrote in, December 29th, I completed 4 rounds of AC, the Red Devil, then 12 weeks of Taxol. My chemo brain seemed to diminish quite a bit, but now seems to be back really badly again. I recently tested positive for toxic mold and Lyme. Could either of those be more the problem than chemo, or does chemo brain come and go? If so, is there a trigger?
Hmm. Yeah. So there are a couple ways to answer this, but ultimately you can say, yep, toxic mold levels in your body and Lyme infection, they can definitely cause cognitive trouble, brain fog, a lot of the same kinds of symptoms. And so folks who have never had cancer or chemo, but if they have Lyme infection, they could have a lot of the same kinds of symptoms. And so if you are having some trouble from cancer treatment, and that was seeming to recover, but then you end up with these other things, I would think, well, those are kind of magnifying some trouble that your brain was already having. That would be my line of thinking. I mean, I can't, right. You know, I'm not able to say for sure. Chemo, so the effects of chemo on the one hand would be something that would not return or come back or get worse. Like if you have chemo and you end your chemo treatment, it's kind of like those termites on the boat, where once your chemo treatment is over, it's like you've gotten rid of all the termites.
Okay.
Right. So the termites are gone. So they're no longer actively causing trouble in the wood of your boat. And if symptoms come back, if trouble comes back, symptoms worsen, it would not be, you know, you didn't restart the chemo.
Right.
Right. So the termites didn't come back. It would be something else that would be making the symptoms get worse. Now we can have fluctuation in symptoms for a lot of reasons. I mean, you can be recovering from cancer related cognitive trouble and feel like things are getting better and getting better, but then you can have, you know, kind of a setback for a lot of different reasons. That doesn't necessarily mean you have more just a lot of different reasons. I mean, like the Lyme, but you can, you know, if other things in your life have changed, like, you know, stress has increased or sleep problems, you're having more trouble with sleep or fatigue or something else is going on. Usually that would be making the symptoms get worse.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
That makes sense.
Well, thank you for that. Yeah. So I have a question from Lisa. She's asking, are there any games, exercises, puzzles, et cetera, that can counteract brain fog?
Mental activity is really important. And this is, kind of adding to what we talked about before in terms of nutrition, hydration, exercise, stress management. The final piece of the puzzle is directly exercising your brain.
Okay.
Right. And so, kind of a, you know, there's not necessarily one specific game that's going to be the magic wand. But if we think about, well, if our brain is like a bunch of muscles, we need to use them, use it or lose it. And we can exercise them to strengthen them. And whether or not you use, you know, Sudoku puzzles or word searches, kind of my thought about those is we want to think about kind of three criteria, to, guide our decision about brain activity and brain exercise. And the first criteria is that whatever you're going to choose to do to exercise your brain, it should be enjoyable. Okay. Life is short. If you don't enjoy it, don't bother with it. Like if you don't like word mm-hmm. searches, don't bother with them.
Right? Okay.
If you don't like Sudoku puzzles, don't worry about it. Find something else that's more enjoyable. And also because if you don't enjoy it, you're probably not going to work very hard at it. And so it's probably not going to benefit you all that much. So first criteria, it should be enjoyable. Second is that it needs to challenge you. So if it's really, really easy, I mean, you can do it for the enjoyment of it. But if it's too easy, it's like, you know, doing bicep curls with a 1 pound weight.
Right.
That might be too easy for me. It's not going to really strengthen my muscle at all. So it needs to challenge. And then the third is variety. If I enjoy crossword puzzles and I'm doing ones that are really challenging, but crossword puzzles are the only thing I'm doing to keep my mind active, then that's not good enough, right? That's not going to help me overcome the brain fog. I need a good variety of things. I need crossword puzzles. I need things like reading. I need conversations where I'm speaking out loud. I might need jigsaw puzzles. You know, that helped me exercise my vision and my spatial skills. But then just also looking at life and saying, well, what are the activities in life that are important to me?
Right.
And how can I stay active with those things and challenge my mind with the hobbies, interests, or the people that are important to me to exercise my brain that way.
Mm-hmm. I like that. And it, you reminded me of, I was looking at your page and you were talking about when moving some furniture or something and happening to leave the bucket of beets at wherever you weren't supposed to leave it. And it, how you were like, if I just took a little bit more time to recognize that moment and the importance of this. And I was thinking about that and I was like, wow, sometimes for me, if I just slow down and allow my brain to process this moment versus rushing through it, I'm giving myself a, you know, a little leg up if I just slow down and just really, you know, give myself that moment to really soak in whatever it is. And it's kind of like a brain game to me. I have to like tell myself, okay, today you're going to be really good and focus and, you know, give your brain that time to digest everything that's going through today. And maybe I'll forget less.
If there was one specific thing that would get you the greatest benefit out of everything for strengthening your mind, it's the skill of mindfulness.
Okay.
Yeah. So just being mindful, right? And so much of mindfulness, you know, you type into Google the term mindfulness, the majority of what you're going to get are mindfulness for stress, right? Yeah. Mindfulness for relaxation, meditation. But the term mindfulness, you know, itself is just, well, being mindful, right? Paying attention, noticing. Right. That's a skill all of its own, right?
It
noticing
really
the moment, paying attention to the moment, slowing down, being fully present in the moment. That's a skill. And that's a very powerful tool if we practice that and strengthen that. And
definitely
that would have helped me more with the beats.
Well, it's like you said, that acknowledgement, being mindful or acknowledging mindfulness, you have to acknowledge it before you can start working on it for stress or sleep or whatever. You have to know what that is and what you're trying to achieve. So yeah, I've been acknowledging it. I love that. Kim wrote in, radiation seems to keep breaking down the area of the body long after the procedure. My husband is having heart issues possibly related to the radiation he had on his lung. He's having GI bleeding possibly caused by intestinal wall thinning caused by radiation he took to his prostate. What are the possibilities that gamma knife radiation on the cerebellum will cause issues in the future?
So that's a good question. And so how I would respond to that is to say, well, it's possible. I mean, anything is possible. But a way to think about it is to think about our brain and our body in terms of aging and wear and tear. And so if you think about wear and tear and aging, and if our body and if our brain is like a car, and you take two cars that are the same age, say you take two cars that are both 10 years old, and even if these cars miraculously have the same number of miles, they both got 100,000 miles on them. But one of them lived in Pennsylvania and one of them lived in North Carolina. They're the same age, same number of miles. Do they look the same?
No.
Right? Are they have the same amount of wear and tear? Right.
No.
So Pennsylvania has hard, a lot of salt on the road. Right. So you're going to get rust, you get a lot more wear and tear. You take two cars that are both in Pennsylvania. Right. But one of them was owned by just a couple of adults who were very meticulous and took really good care of it. And another car, same age, same number of miles, but had a really busy family that lived in this minivan with lots of kids. Right. And even if the parents were diligent, you know, there's only so much you can do. It's going to get, you know, upholstery is going to get more wear and tear to it. Right. So, our brain, we can think about our brain the same way, that as we get older, we all accumulate some wear and tear, but we don't all wear out at the same rate. You take two people who are both 50, but their brains are not going to have the same amount of wear and tear on them for a lot of different reasons though. Right. Some it's just genetics. Some it's life experiences. It's how many health problems did they have over their life? It's lots of different things are going to influence that wear and tear. And so certainly if you have is something like as bad as a stroke or a severe traumatic brain injury, right? Well, that's a pretty extreme event causing more than just wear and tear, but causing formal damage. You know, that's kind of a car accident. But lots of other things that happen, they don't necessarily cause damage in the way that a stroke does, you know, not a car accident, but they kind of contribute to this wear and tear. And so having concussions, having too many surgeries, diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, smoking, sleep apnea, migraines, a lot of things can contribute to this subtle, gradual, but nevertheless wear and tear. And so then the same thing with cancer and cancer treatments, you know, they can add to this wear and tear. And so it might be the case that, I've got the treatment, the gamma knife this year, and that causes me some trouble. Am I going to have worse trouble 10 years from now because of the treatment that I had now? On the one hand, yeah, it's possible because that treatment is one of those factors that contributes to the overall wear and tear and kind of has sped up the aging process a little bit. But then it also depends on, well, what else happens over the next 10 years, right? Or if we shorten it to 5 years, if we say, well, I had the treatment this year, 5 years from now, what's my brain going to look like? Well, it kind of depends on what happens over the next 5 years. Am I fortunate and I have no other health issues over the next 5 years? And so my brain has stayed quite healthy. I haven't needed any other treatments, no other surgeries. My blood pressure is good. Cholesterol is good. I don't have diabetes. I'm sleeping well at night. I'm getting good sleep. That's really, really important. I'm exercising well. I'm eating healthy. I'm keeping my mind active with brain games and with social interaction and curiosity and hobbies. You know, that's going to play a big role in how healthy my mind is going to be working 5 years from now.
That makes sense.
Very good. Thank you for answering those questions for us.
Absolutely. And thank you for sending those questions in to our listeners.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So how can caretakers take better support of their loved ones who may be suffering with symptoms of PON?
Just understanding it, right, is the first step, right? Understanding what they're going through, trying to put yourself in their shoes. Giving them the benefit of the doubt, like when they forget something, when they misunderstand you, you know, start with the assumption that they didn't do it on purpose. give them the benefit of the doubt. Knowing that, well, at times, depending on the day, you know, kind of depends on, you know, are they having pain issues that fluctuate from day to day? Right. They having fatigue issues that fluctuate from day to day. You know, some days, their mind, their memory, their thinking might be sharper and better than other days. And so just being mindful of that. And if it's an off day, then no, I'm going to have to slow down. If I'm going to ask them something, you know, if I have five things I need to talk with them about, I'm going to slow it down, maybe do it one at a time.
Right.
Be prepared to know that I might need to repeat myself. And that's okay. Yep.
And I learned with, I wanted to share with our listeners just from my personal experience is telling your family and just communicating that to them is really important because I hadn't done that at first because I didn't quite understand what was happening. And it was very frustrating for me. It was very frustrating for my family. And once I communicated that to them and told them my specific needs, like my husband had an alarm for every 20 minutes of the day, something new was happening and he wouldn't turn them off. And it would make me so, I just couldn't take all the stimulus. And so I, you know, just telling him that and him being aware of the alarms and just shutting them off or the kids all talking at me at one time, or like you said, maybe asking one thing instead of five right now. They really, my family was really good about it, but you know, communicating that to your loved ones, I think is very important, or the people, you know, who are in your life helping caretake for you, you know, is very important because they don't understand. They have no idea until we explain to them what's going on. And we're having a hard enough time explaining it or understanding it ourselves. So I think communicating that to them is super, super important.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And I know we kind of touched on this a little bit
prior, but just before we wrap up. And so how can patients advocate for themselves? So you mentioned going to your Facebook page, showing the articles that you have linked there. Are there any other resources that you would recommend?
Yeah, so those are great. The, you know, the first step really is looking up like Cleveland Clinic, MD Anderson, Mayo Clinic, some of those big institutions, they have pages on ChemoBrain. And so really studying those, and because they talk about the various causes, the various factors, they talk different strategies and ways to compensate. And then I put new stuff on my Facebook page, you know, articles that I come across that would be helpful. And so that's a good resource. The next thing to consider is seeing if you can, you know, depending on how much trouble you're having, if you're having a lot of trouble with memory, it's really affecting your daily life, trouble with memory or other cognitive symptoms, then talk with like your family doc, or if you have a neurologist, talk with them and see if there's a neuropsychologist around that you could get in to see. And it could help further evaluate, help better understand what are the specific factors for you personally that are getting in the way of your mind working well for you, and give you a more tailored plan for how to strengthen up your mind and your brain. And a piece of that too then might be speech therapy. A lot of people don't realize that speech therapists do cognitive rehab. Cognitive rehab is like physical therapy for your memory.
Wow.
So speech therapists, they're kind of like a coach that would guide them through different exercises and strategies, some to help compensate, but then others to help actively strengthen memory and attention and these cognitive skills. Yeah. And so oftentimes, getting into that just involves talking with the family doc, and the family doc can help provide the referral or the order for that.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
Nice to know.
Well, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to do what you were doing. I was going to say, you've been an amazing person to talk to. We are so grateful for your time. I want our listeners to be able to find you.
Yes.
So where can they find you?
The best place is just my Facebook page. That's the best. Just Dr. Matt Bridgman, Resilient Brains, trying to help people make their brains more resilient.
Absolutely. And then I'll be sure and I'll link that in our show notes so people can go directly to your Facebook page and find you. And is there any words of wisdom, last message you would like to leave with us?
think of your brain as like a whole bunch of muscles. Right. Yeah. And so you can exercise your brain. You can strengthen it. You have that, and also thinking and even moods and emotions. They're like skills. Memory is a skill. Attention is a skill. Language, speaking, planning, organizing, even our moods and emotions. They're kind of skills that we can exercise, and we can adjust, and we can strengthen these things. So, yeah.
Well, thank you again so much for your time. We really do are so honored that you're here with us, that you've taken this time, and just thank you for the research that you're doing in this incredible area for cancer patients, but also for aging brains.
Yes, definitely. Yep, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. Thank you so very much. You have been a delight to talk to, and I would love to have you back again one day. Producer Julia is dying that she wasn't able to meet you today. So we definitely need to have you back.
Yeah.
I'm sure she'll have super nerdy questions for you.
Yes, absolutely. That'd be great.
Awesome. All right.
Listener,
thank you so much.
And if you have any topics that you would like us to cover, please feel free to send those to podcasts@weareyoursupport.com.
And follow us on all of our social media and all of your podcasting platforms. Leave us a beautiful 5-star review and some kind words. And join us next week for our Spotlight series. We will see you guys then.
Talk to you then. Bye.
We are your support.
Thank you for talking cancer.